Okay. So, the foods to eat, the actions to take for a better brain, the wall's way.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we can manage the sound so you hear it without causing too much whine. The first thing I have to say is the FDA has not evaluated any of the claims I will make or any of the statements I make in this presentation, in any of the printed materials that you buy, on my website or in my book. Nor are any of my claims intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Because in the United States, only an FDA-approved drug, diet, or device can make such claims. This is all about education. I am not attempting to replace the guidance you receive from your own personal physician. I'm simply trying to educate you so you can think about things in perhaps a slightly different way. Now, the Walls diet recommends 9 or more servings of fruits and vegetables every single day, which is more than what the American Dietetics Association recommends, which is 5 to 9. So I'm a conventional medicine doc. I live up here. So when you are feeling ill and develop signs and symptoms, you come up and we get a diagnosis and we relegate you to an organ system somewhere. It could be a neurological diagnosis, a cardiac diagnosis. But we are aware more and more that the reason you've developed these signs and symptoms is that the molecules in your body have gone wrong. And as the physiology goes wrong, that is, you have problems with your immune system, problems with how your mitochondria work, with your digestion and gut bacteria balance, with the toxic load, with the psychological trauma or physical trauma or your cell membranes, things begin to go wrong and damage will slowly accumulate in your tissues, your organs. You'll not feel well. You will come see me. You'll be whining about this or that. I will not have a diagnosis. You'll be frustrated with me, and I'll be wishing you could find another doctor. That will go on for about 10 years. And then finally, when there's enough organ damage, now I can nail you into neurology or endocrinology or cardiology. But it took often a decade of tissue damage of wrong molecules. And the reason these wrong molecules happen have to do with environmental inputs. So there's the genetic input, but there's also the diet, the food you eat, the food you don't eat, the toxins to which you're exposed, the exercise you are doing or not doing, the trauma, physical and psychological, in your mind, spiritual equilibrium that will impact these physiology processes, these molecules that are getting made, that will either then get made correctly or not. And if they aren't being made correctly, you'll come see me whining for about 10 years before you have enough damage that I can make a diagnosis and begin to treat you. Okay. So, we're talking about the brain, so I'm slanting this whole conversation around the brains. We have two pictures of brains up there. One's a healthy brain with a lot of brain cells and a lot of myelin, insulation on the wiring. We all have about 1 billion brain cells and 100 trillion connections. The Alzheimer's brain has been losing connections and losing brain cells at a very rapid rate. I'm old enough that when I went to medical school, I learned that you lost a brain cell, you were a poop out of luck, you couldn't make any more once you were born. Turns out that's not true. We are continuously remodeling our brains in response to the environment. We build new connections, prune old ones. The problem for that Alzheimer's patient and for most of us is we've not been giving ourselves the building blocks or the correct environment to do the rebuilding. So all we're doing is pruning. And if that happens, your brain's going to get steadily smaller. And that's a problem. Okay. Real quick, my story. I have progressive MS. I was in a tilt-reclined wheelchair. I was diagnosed in 2000. By 2003, 2004, I had such back weakness. I was in a tilt-reclined wheelchair. I could walk short distances. which with each year grew progressively more short. I'm also an academic medicine doc. I got the best care from the best people, aggressive care, because, you know, I knew how bad it could be, but I got steadily worse. By 2007, I needed two canes to walk a very short distance. I was still working full time, but life was really a huge struggle. That was when I really discovered, after years of relearning my biology and biochem, because I wanted to do whatever I could to help myself, and I had started on my journey, I learned more about functional medicine, completed my understanding, and radically redesigned my diet. So I was eating specifically for brain health, for muscle health, to make myelin, to make neurotransmitters. And I learned about neuromuscular electrical stimulation. I started the intensive nutrition. I started the neuromuscular electrical stimulation. These are not approved FDA treatments for MS. But I based them in sound science. So in 2 years, I made a lot of progress. So I went from the wheelchair to doing a trail ride to the Canadian Rockies when I went up there to give a lecture up from the chair. And so you're here tonight because the fundamental question is, could intensive nutrition help me with my brain, with my chronic health issues? I can't tell you specifically that it can or cannot. I don't have that kind of research data. But what I can review for you is the biology of why it makes sense to eat very intentionally to improve the molecular workings that are happening in your brain cells and in your body. And then you can decide what you'd like to do with that. So my theory that I developed as I hit the wheelchair, and it was very apparent that all the best, the great treatment that I was receiving was not going to stop me from getting becoming bed dependent. And if you ask, Doc, why do people get MS, we can say the body attacks the myelin. We don't really know why. We aren't sure. The best we can do is give you an immune-suppressive agent. Well, I have a more expanded view. I use that functional medicine view, and I think there are many factors in MS and probably in all chronic disease. There are the triggering infections. Can't do much about that one. They've already happened. There is the unique DNA I got from mom and dad. There are some things I can do about that, and I will tell you. There's the micronutrient deficiencies. There's a lot you can do about that one. There are the allergy and food sensitivities, environmental sensitivities, and there are things you can do about that. And the toxins that you have to pee out, poop out, or sweat out every day, and that's why we're having a sweat lodge experience tonight. And then there's this new theory, chronic venous blockages, that if you have a really crappy diet, you have so many inflammation molecules in your bloodstream, your blood is sluggish and slow, decreasing the flow to your brain and to your extremities. So my theory back in 07, when I said, okay, I'm going to radically redo my life, I was going to do a terrible scientific experiment in that, you know, in science, we can do one thing at a time so we know what this variable did or not. You know, I couldn't wait. I was going to be bed bound. I was going to do everything I could to fix as many molecular processes as I could. Okay, you all have DNA from mom and dad. Think of it, it's like the body of a car. We all have different kinds of cars here. Some of us get to have Porsches, but most of us get to have old VW bug. You know, sort of basic. You'll have thousands and thousands of enzymes in your body. Most of them are going to be wild type and work pretty well. But we all have many that do not work very well. Okay? And so the question is, for the enzymes that don't work well, what could you do about it? Now, these are articles, and there are hundreds, that we are identifying the single nucleotide polymorphisms. That's a fancy word for a poopy enzyme as compared to a wild enzyme. So the wild enzymes work well, the poopy enzymes either don't work at all or work only poorly. We know that the sulfur metabolism enzymes are associated with a lot of bad brain trouble. Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, motor neuron disease, lupus, rheumatoid arthritis. So if you got a bad brain, or you have arthritis, autoimmune problems, you're more likely to have poopy sulfur metabolism enzymes. On the other side, enzymes that involve the B vitamins, we see that you're more likely to have a poopy B vitamin enzyme if you have a bad brain. Schizophrenia, depression, bipolar, B12 deficiencies, high blood pressure, coronary disease. Okay? So that's pretty interesting. It turns out about 20% of the population, so 20% of the population will have a poopy enzyme. And you might have just a slightly poopy enzyme or a very seriously poopy enzyme. Okay? And so the question is, if I have a family history of a bad brain or a bad heart, I'm a little more likely to have poopy enzymes. And my father had a motor neuron problem, so I knew that I certainly had more likely a sulfur metabolism problem, and certainly already knew I had a bad brain. So there's a high probability that I could have a faulty metabolism in those two enzymes. So I took sulfur amino acids, and I took B vitamins. And the two that I was particularly interested were the methylfolate and methylcobalamin. So you have to shop around to get the methyl form, or you can just take a high-dose B vitamin. I chose the methylated form. Okay, micronutrient intake. This is a wonderful study. Weston Price, a brilliant guy, wanted to know why so many kids had terrible teeth. And rather than study terrible teeth, he did this radical thing. He studied healthy teeth. He took a multidisciplinary group out to 14 different indigenous peoples around the country, or actually around the globe, and they did dental exams, did mental health exams, physical exams, analyzed the food and the soil. And then they took pictures. They analyzed the data based on whether or not those people were eating a primitive diet, a first-generation westernized diet, or a second-generation westernized diet. The primitive diet was quite different. The Eskimos ate things very differently than the Aborigines and the Africans and the South Americans. But they had diets that were consistently packed with vitamins, minerals, and essential fats. And they had straight teeth. They had great physical fitness, great mental health, and virtually no chronic disease. Now, the westernized diets were remarkably consistent. They looked similar to what we eat. A lot of meat, a lot of white potatoes, a lot of white sugar, white flour, very few greens, very few colors. And so it was no surprise. They had inadequate amounts of vitamins, inadequate amounts of minerals, and inadequate essential fats. So they had crooked, rotten teeth. They had a lot of high blood pressure, rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes. And so what we learned in this study is that we are remarkably resilient as a species. We can eat radically different things and enjoy great health. But we did identify what we couldn't eat and enjoy great health. And that is, now I need some people to shout it out for me. What can you not eat and expect to have good health?
White bread.
Yeah. Can't eat sugar, white bread, a lot of white flour. If you aren't eating vegetables, folks, expect to be unhealthy. That study, brilliant study, was done in 1936. He predicted that the primitive peoples would have a rapid decline of health, which of course has happened. He also predicted a rapid decline in health for the developing world as well if we continue to eat this westernized diet, which of course has happened. This study is taken from 2005, and this is the using the national registry that happens every year where we do our nutritional assessment, very scientifically pure, and we're looking at the nutritional intake. What you see here, these are the B vitamins. This is what you need for your brain to work. About a third to a fourth of us, a quarter to a third to half, are missing key vitamins for your brain to work. Then you get up here to zinc and iodine and omega-3s.
Zinc, iodine, omega-3 are critical for making myelin. If you want to communicate brain cell to brain cell, you need to have myelin. If you don't have myelin, you can't communicate very well. You have a lot of problems with memory loss, irritability, attention deficit disorder, behavior problems. It is no wonder that our children have an epidemic of mood disorder, violence, aggression, and learning disabilities. We are letting them starve their brains. Okay. You have a billion brain cells. You have between 1 trillion and 100 trillion connections. I have a confession. Each one of my brain cells is pretty stupid. The same is true for you. Your brain cells by themselves are very stupid. But if they can talk to the other billion brain cells that you have, then you have insight, judgment, humor, and hopefully some wisdom. And hopefully you'll be doing just fine. So if you've got a good network, you're going to do great. If you've got a bad network, you're going to have a lot of learning disability, Alzheimer's, irritability, fly off the handle, not get along. So when your network is damaged, if you don't have the building blocks to make a good network, you're going to have problems. Ethernet. When I give this talk to the kids, they all know about Ethernet. Ethernet is the fast, high-conductive downloadable stuff that we all need to download things fast from the internet. This is how you communicate very quickly. You have Ethernet. Myelin is your brain's Ethernet. Now, 90% of us are not eating enough omega-3 fats to make the amount of myelin that is in numerous scientific studies have shown that if you have 1 to 4 grams of omega-3 fat in your diet, you have superior mental health outcomes, superior heart outcomes. The average omega-3 intake in America is 100 milligrams. The ideal ratio omega-3 to omega-6 from our epidemiologic studies is 1 to 1 or 3 to 1. The average American ratio is 30 to 1 to 45 to 1. That's because we have so much omega-6, which is vegetable oil, corn oil, soybean oil. We eat meat that's been fed, the cows are fed corn, so they shift their fat to almost exclusively omega-6. So what I tell people is you want to reduce your vegetable oil. Instead, make your own salad dressing using flax oil, hemp oil, lime juice, and whatever spices you enjoy. And eat grass-fed meats, free-range chickens, wild fish. Olive oil, I did not mention. I'm not going to take questions during this. You do have notes to write your questions. I will answer questions while you're looking at this material on the tables and getting your snacks. Thiamine is also necessary. Folate, B12, and minerals are all necessary for making myelin. That means green leaves, green leaves, green leaves. And the cobalamin, actually, Grandma was right, liver and onions is like way cool if you want to have a good brain, liver and onions. Nuts, seeds are good for you. Meat products and some bacterial products for the B12. Most U.S. soil is depleted in iodine. And you've been listening to me when I said quit using iodine, quit using salt because it makes your blood pressure go up. So what instead happened, we've become iodine depleted. And so I encourage my patients to begin using seaweed and have seafood every day. With the caveat, because you've been iodine depleted, you're likely on thyroid medicine or your thyroid's not functioning very well. So So as you replace your iodine with kelp, your dose of thyroid medication will change. So you have to let your physicians know that you're eating more seaweed and more kelp. Neurotransmitters. We'll assume that you're going to go home tonight, you've seen the light, you're going to eat for your myelin. So you all have good Ethernet. The next thing that you'll want to do is you want your brain cells to be able to talk to one another. That means neurotransmitter molecules. And to make those molecules, you need B vitamins and you need sulfur. So B vitamins is all about green leaves, nuts, mushrooms, nutritional yeast. Sulfur is about cabbage, the cabbage family, collards, kale, rutabagas, turnips, radishes, broccoli, broccoli, arugula, watercress, mustard greens, onions, garlic, leeks, chives, mushrooms, and the white button mushrooms that are less expensive are just as wonderful for you. Dried mushrooms are just as wonderful for you. Asparagus, red peppers, nuts and seeds. Excitotoxicity. In MS, and in people who have a neurodegenerative disorder such as Parkinson's, such as Alzheimer's, or people who have a refractory psychiatric disorder, mood disorders, people with chronic pain, spasms, are likely to have excessive excitotoxicity from too high levels of glutamate. In MS, and I have personally huge amounts of neuropathic pain, so I was very keen about doing something about that excitotoxicity. So if your glutamate is too high, that will strain your brain cell, and with enough strain, your brain cell poops out and dies. Now, the body has a balance to that, and that's called GABA, or gamma-aminobutyric acid. And as a physician, I prescribe drugs to boost GABA quite often, gabapentin and Lyrica being two of the most common. These are seizure drugs that are used to help people with severe pain, to help people with seizures. But the good news is you can do it with medicine, because to make GABA requires a lot of sulfur, and it requires a lot of a particular enzyme called glutathione. And so there are supplements, those sulfur amino acids will provide sulfur for the brain. There are foods that help induce that glutathione enzyme. That's the cruciferous vegetables. Okay, somebody shout out some cruciferous vegetables for me. Okay, you guys are on top of that. And Allison vegetables, those are the onion family, so... Yep, okay, got that down. And mushrooms, the exotic mushrooms are wonderful, but so are the cheap ones. Just be sure it's an edible mushroom. Because there are some poisonous ones out there. I don't want you to just assume, because I said mushrooms are good, you can't assume they're all good. You have to identify your mushroom, please. And you need minerals, iodine, selenium, magnesium, kelp, seaweed, greens. Magnesium is the central ion in chlorophyll, much like iron is the central ion in your hemoglobin. So if you eat a lot of green leaves, you get more magnesium, and it's easy for your body to absorb the magnesium in the green leaves than it is in the milk of magnesia. So, okay. And iodine and selenium in the seaweed. And seaweed, actually, the powdered kelp, which the co-op stocks, is wonderful. You put it in a salt shaker, and when you're cooking, baking with it, my personal goal is to have a quarter teaspoon a day per person, with the proviso that if you're on thyroid medicine, that may change the amount of thyroid medicine that you need. And if you happen to have a burned-out Graves' disease, because you're so iodine-depleted that it wasn't active when you replace your iodine, you could develop some symptoms of excessive thyroid. The gut matters. Now that you've tuned in to how you eat, for all your brain cells to get that great nutrition, your gut's going to have to digest it. and carry it in the bloodstream. And all those molecules, as they come into the bloodstream, we have 70% of our immune cells are lining the gut. And those immune cells will inspect molecule by molecule. Is that molecule a safe molecule to let in? Or is that molecule an invading organism? And if it is an invading organism, I'm going to call in all my other white blood cell army, and we're going to make war. It's a very important function, but you don't have to do it correctly. So, one of the drugs that are prescribed very commonly are proton pump inhibitors or H2 blockers to lower stomach acid. And that's because the poor stomach cells have been so starved of nutrition, they're sick and weakly, and so we interpret that heartburn, and so we treat that by lowering the acid further. Now, there are some real consequences to that, because stomach acid activates the enzymes your pancreas will use to digest food. It activates the absorption of minerals, which I've now convinced you that your brain needs to function. And it sets the tone for which bacteria are going to live in your gut. Now, we have, a billion brain cells, a trillion body cells, but we have 100 trillion bacteria. You are outnumbered 100 to 1. And you want to be sure you have the right guys living in your gut, or you're screwed. So when we lower stomach acid, we interfere with digestion, and when we change our diet, we invite a different 100 trillion to live in our gut. 50,000 years ago, we ate, like the primitives did, a variety of things, but there were some things we didn't eat. Does anybody know what it was we could not eat 50,000 years ago? So we couldn't eat anything with grain, couldn't eat anything with sugar. It would be pretty darn hard to catch anything and make it hold still long enough that you can milk it. Except your mama. And even then, by the time you got to be 5, she said, "Honey, cut me off." So you have to have milk for a little while, but only a little while. So if you follow the Walls diet, greens, colors, sulfur, we as a species are familiar with the bacteria that grow in our gut. We've learned how to live with them. We have a very happy, cozy relationship. They digest our food. They digest each other's byproducts. We either use those byproducts in our own biochemistry, like vitamin K, or we pee and poop it out. It's not a problem. But as soon as we started eating a lot of these new foods, grains and dairy, and over the last 6,000 years we've eaten steadily more of those, we change the environment for 100 trillion friends. And these new kids on the block beat up on our friends. And they won the war in many cases. And so then you have a lot of proteus, a lot of staph, a lot of strep, a lot of Clostridium difficile. And when you have those growing in your gut, we know from many scientific studies, you are much more likely to have a mental health problem, depression, mood disorder, a problem with an autoimmune diagnosis, and inflammation in general. It's a very important concept. If you eat the westernized diet, you introduce new bacteria into your gut. You have 100 trillion that are thriving in all that sugar, grain, and dairy. And as a species, we've not had that many generations get used to it. And looking around, our studies will tell us we are much more likely to have a chronic medical problem when you have those bacteria living in your gut. So if you had a lot of antibiotics as a kid, if you're on a proton pump inhibitor, if you feed your gut all that sugar white flour, you're more likely to have shifted your 100 trillion away from the good guys that we as a species know how to live with happily to more of these new interlopers that we haven't learned how to live with. Okay. See, I can do this without
So there's the genetic predisposition, low stomach acid, pancreas that has pooping out, so it can't digest your food very well. You had a bypass of your stomach. So you have inadequately digested food particles. They come across too big. If you get the wrong bugs living in your gut, they make the lining, the attachment from cell to cell, and you call those tight junctions. It's supposed to be very, very tight. Well, they loosen them. It's like taking going up on your roof with a giant drill and drilling holes in your roof. Your gut has become leaky. So these big molecules diffuse into your bloodstream. Your immune cells are inspecting molecule by molecule, but they see the molecules are too big, and they will say, invader! And they call the other white blood cells, and so I am more likely to identify the food I'm eating as an invading organism, and gluten and dairy are the most common offenders, and you develop a gluten allergy and a dairy allergy. And so we have this immune inflammation molecules coming along to attack the gluten. You get an immune complex that then goes to your liver, and your liver has to clean up that junk. That puts a big strain on the liver. Eventually, all that junk spills over into your general circulation. That's when you begin to have chronic, unexplained whining complaints. That's when you start seeing me complaining about headaches, fatigue, muscle pains, rashes, irritability. I do my test. I don't know what's going on. I say, I don't know what's going on. Everything looks fine. See me next year. You see me next year, you feel a little worse. I do the test. I still don't know what's going on. It could be being driven by this leaky gut problem. Okay. So the NIH, you've heard of them, that's the National Institutes for Health, they've said that celiac disease is much more, is increasingly common. It's now up to 1%. That is allergy or sensitivity to the gluten, which is the protein in wheat. But we also now realize that the vast majority of people have do not have no belly complaints, no diarrhea, no malabsorption, no weight loss. And this is just a sampling of the case reports of gluten sensitivity being associated with a neurological disease, a bad brain problem that was diagnosed. Then someone had the brilliant idea of checking for gluten sensitivity, put the person on a gluten-free diet, which is a lot of work. I will not minimize that. And the neurological symptoms completely resolved. So will that mean that every bad brain is because you're gluten-sensitized? No, of course not. But it does mean if you got a bad brain, it's worth thinking about. Now, the challenges are the standard test for celiac disease is a small bowel biopsy. Because it can be patchy, and there's always a gradation from mild to severe, and we don't diagnose anything until it's severe. You could have it for years or decades in the mild before you take it all the way to severe and get a diagnosis, or you could just have managed to capture only the normal spots. So even the gold standard has some flaws to it. Blood tests are not reliable because we have two kinds of immune system, the innate, which is the most ancient immune system, and the adaptive, which is the immunoglobulin. So I can test for immunoglobulin reactions. I don't have a good test for the innate reactions. So blood tests are helpful if they're markedly abnormal, but the reality is if it's negative, you still could have food sensitivity. There's a stool test. I put the website up there. You can order that yourself. It's about $380, so it's not cheap. You poop in a cute little white hat. You put it, this is even better, you put it in the freezer. Label it carefully.
And you freeze it for 24 hours and you ship it off and they'll give you a report. That is not standard of care, and I don't believe any insurance company will pay for that. But I'm going to make the case that gluten sensitivity is not the only reason you want to consider giving up the gluten grains. So epigenetics, the food, we know that our genes turn on and off in response to our diet. And there are several studies that have shown if you eat gluten grains, sugar, white potato diet, you turn on 65 pro-inflammation genes. If you eat greens, colors, sulfur, high-quality proteins, or the Walls diet, you turn on 75 anti-inflammation genes. So you shift, you just dial back all the inflammation problems. And I said earlier that poor blood flow, if you have a lot of inflammation molecules in your blood is thicker, it flows more sluggishly. And we have a number of studies that have looked prospectively at MS and found evidence of slow, sluggish blood flow in the setting of MS. This is very hot, very new literature, and most neurologists are not aware of this. And there are also studies that show if you have the white potato, sugar, white flour diet, you have this sluggish blood flow. And if you have the greens, colors, sulfur, protein, the Walls diet, you have more fluid blood flow. So, bottom line, more sulfur is less inflammation. And the enzymes that are modulated favorably, if you're into biochem, I've listed for you NRF2, NF-kappa-B, glutathione, and those are the sulfur vegetables I've laid out for you. The garlic, onion, leeks, the broccoli, kale, Brussels sprouts, radishes, mustard greens, arugula, and mushrooms. But be sure you identify your mushrooms first. And then you need healthy mitochondria, because to do the work of making myelin, making neurotransmitters, your brain relies on mitochondria. And to make mitochondria, you need B vitamins, coenzyme Q. And so that's green leaves, nuts, sea vegetables. I'll talk more about this next week when I do the poisons lecture, but the mitochondria are also key in removing the poisons. And we're going to balance the wheels. So if you remember on that tree, I said the stress in your life, psychological traumas, mental health issues, will have a big impact. And so one thing that we all need to think about is how we lower our stress hormones. Because excessive stress hormones, chronically elevated cortisol, is very stressful for brain cells. And I don't want to stress my brain cells more than necessary. So we're going to talk about how you can support your adrenals, your sleep hormones, and your thyroid hormones. So minerals are very important to the thyroid as well. Same bunch that you've been hearing about, iodine, selenium, and magnesium. So greens, Brazil nuts, and seaweed. Now, I put the picture up of the zebra because, you know, the zebra, they have sort of a hard life. They get chased by lions, and if they don't run fast enough, they get eaten. And some brilliant guy went out and measured the cortisol level of these zebras when they're being chased by the lions. Of course, it zips right up. And then they catch the poor slow zebra and start eating the slow zebra. The other zebras, you know, run about another couple hundred yards and they stop and start eating grass and their cortisol levels plummet. They've learned how to relax. Okay? So you and I, if we're like most Americans, we have 50 flight or flight stress responses a day. And if you're like most Americans, you've not learned how to relax and let go and start eating the grass again. You're still running away from the last big bad meeting. And so there are some things you can do to help reset so you aren't continually running from the big bad meanie. So skin contact is one way. Massage, stroking. I personally get some essential oils from the co-op. I also mix it with some walnut oil. She drops my hand. I do a foot massage or a hand massage practically throughout the day. So it needs just a few seconds. It's wonderful. It brings things down right away. Then there's other quiet time. And, you know, there are many options. There's not one correct way to do this. So there's prayer, meditation. Journaling is profoundly useful. Keeping a journal, writing a few minutes every day about whatever it is that's troubling you, in several studies have been shown to favorably impact your immune cells and lower the likelihood that you'll be in the ER or have a chronic disease for the next 2 years. How easy is that? And furthermore, it's also associated with the increased likelihood of maintaining employment, and having a satisfactory interpersonal relationship with your significant other. How cool is that? Yoga, Tai Chi, meditation, prayer. Easy things. These are some audio-guided CD meditations. There are two companies. There are probably many companies that are available. The concept is they use some background music and put in one signal into the right ear, a different one to the left ear, and the harmony will induce alpha waves, which is a fairly deep relaxation phase. You can get either alpha waves, theta waves, delta waves, depending on which products that you buy. You want to improve your sleep. Cortisol interferes with sleep, so Epsom salts bath is very helpful. Melatonin, which is over-the-counter, is the sleep hormone that your brain makes. Because we live in artificial light, we have a hard time. And so for some people, taking supplemental melatonin can be helpful. You want to stimulate nerve growth factors. That means exercise, or that means mental exercise. Sudoku, crossword puzzles, Nintendo DS, Brain Age, very helpful. We use those things in the traumatic brain injury clinic. A meaningful life is the real road to happiness. Having social connections with family, with friends, and having a purpose to your life. Okay, so hopefully I've given you a new way to think about things. Diagnoses matter less. The molecules in your body matter more. Thinking of how you can improve your environmental inputs matter a great deal. That's what you eat. That's the toxins in your food. We'll talk about that next week. Exercise, psychosocial, what you can do to reset, lower your stress, to connect with family, with friends, and have purpose in your life. So the Walls Way, we're going to pass that. It's 9 cups. It's a plate full of greens, a plate full of sulfur, 3 cups of bright color. You can even drink 100% juice to get the bright color if you want. You want to have some seaweed or seafood every day. Bone broth. I've got a great bone health lecture where I have the bone broth recipe. And you want to reduce the starch, white potatoes, sugars. Repair the gut. You want to reduce allergy exposures. And the autoimmunity lecture is really the big add more on that. Supplements that might be helpful, B vitamins, and you might think about methyl B12, methylfolate if you have a serious brain problem, sulfur amino acids, probiotics, omega-3s. On the probiotics, if you don't change how you eat, if you keep eating the carbs, you know, 30 billion don't have a chance against 100 trillion. And for more information, you can look at that. I'll review. The PowerPoints for today's lecture are $10. For the obesity lecture is $10. That has the daily log and some sample menus. I have a couple copies of the 5 lecture PowerPoints. The other Functional Med Black and White has supplemental nutrition information and toxicology information that I do not cover in the lectures. And you guys, whenever it's convenient, you can complete the survey if you would like. If not, that's fine too. I believe you can stand up. I think there may be some treats for you. And if you want to look at any of the stuff on my table, it's self-serve. I trust all of you.
Questions?
Julie, you want to grab the questions? We're going to pass the questions off to Julie. And then, while you guys are doing your stuff, I'll work on reading through the questions. So I'm going to keep working on the questions. So which non-dairy milk would you recommend, soy, rice, almond, other? I personally use soy. On occasion, I do use almond, rice, and hemp. Soy has a higher protein content. There's more sugar that's been added to the rice, almond, and others. Would you share your age? Yes, I'm 54, and I'm very pleased to say, every time I see my physicians, they say, oh my God, you look 6 months younger than you did last time. How old are my kids? My kids are now 15 and 18. They have watched my descent into profound disability and the remarkable recovery. My whole family eats this way. My kids had a remarkable transformation in their health as well. My son's asthma and acne entirely resolved. My daughter's acne and asthma also resolved. Where to put, how to get nutritional yeast, it's there available in bulk at the co-op. They also have Lewis Labs nutritional yeast. I put it in my smoothies. You can add it to soups. Why is olive oil bad? Olive oil is not bad. Since most Americans have ratios of 30 to 1 and 45 to 1, and you'd like to get a ratio of 3 to 1, I made my own personal choice to not quit using olive oil. I love olive oil. And use hemp and flax oil because I wanted to get more omega-3 oil in our own diet. So I invite you to make your own decision about that. Olive oil is predominantly omega-9 oil, which your body can make. So it's not that olive oil is bad, just that for most of us, we need to figure out how to get in more omega-3s. Red potato, gold potato, purple potato. There are heritage purple potatoes that are purple all the way through, so you get to count them as colors. There are heritage red potatoes that are red all the way through, you get to count them as colors. Yams and sweet potatoes are orange all the way through, so you get to count them as colors. And yes, the gold potato, Yukon golds, are yellow all the way through, so you can sort of count them. It's getting a little light there. And yes, I do have a few potatoes. Emphasis a few. So I have this wonderful recipe where I chop cabbage, garlic, powdered seaweed, and one potato. And you have probably about a half a head of cabbage, and bake that with some pork sausage. And it's really quite wonderful. Does dried kelp count for sea veggies? Yes, that's why I keep saying a quarter teaspoon a day is good. Keep it in mind as you replace your iodine level, your thyroid status will change. And so you have to be alert for the possibility that your thyroid could become overactive. Low iodine is associated with increased risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer. So there are lots of reasons to want to have better iodine status. How much Epsom salts for your bath? I use anywhere from a quarter cup to 2 cups. It was the best stress reliever I found when my daughter discovered Epsom salts. We try to keep her bathroom well stocked. She's an adolescent. She takes them often and long. She's discovered how good they are, and it was just wonderful for the whole family. So how to use nutritional yeast, smoothies and soups, why no olive oil? You can, but I would encourage you at least mix hemp or flax oil 1-to-1. I think we already talked about potatoes. I think I already answered that. Onion, sulfur, and migraines. You want to have more GAB if you have migraines, so taking B vitamins, magnesium, and riboflavin, and eating a lot more sulfur for migraines is really good. I have migraines, and raw onions make them worse. Now, whatever I say doesn't work for everyone. I'm just telling you what worked for me, folks. Yeah, please have common sense. Have a food symptom diary. If food bothers you, it bothers you. You've been sensitized. Your immune cells recognized that food as trouble for you. And so if you eat a food that makes you feel worse, honor that. Don't eat it. No matter what I say. Lately, we hear a lot about vitamins having other toxic agents included in them. How do you know you're getting good, clean vitamins? That is a great question. Food is always superior. Food is always superior. Now, having said that, if you got a bad brain, and you're worried about, do I have one of those poopy enzymes for handling B vitamins? Or do I have those poopy enzymes for handling sulfur? In that circumstance, you may want to take vitamins. Then I would look for a manufacturer that has a seal that says compliant with good manufacturing processes. That means a third party has gone in and tested them for contaminants and purity. So it's good manufacturing processes. What do you drink? I drink green tea throughout the day. I give my daughter green tea. I encourage fixing tea and mixing it with juice and giving it to your kids. A couple cups of coffee a day I don't have a problem with. Red wine. A glass of red wine I don't have a problem with. I have Crohn's disease. 4 other people in my family have it too. What can I do nutritionally for it? Okay, so I'm going to reframe this. I can't give medical advice. That would be a huge problem. But for someone who had an autoimmune disease running in their family, my conclusion from the functional medicine side is, I probably got some bad SNPs, so I probably got some poopy enzymes, maybe the B vitamin sulfur area. I bet I have the bad bacteria that have gone amok in my body from all of that proton pump, stomach acid lowering medicine or antibiotics I took as a kid, or all those carbs and dairy and sugar that I ate, so I got the wrong critters in my gut. So I'm going to try looking at my diet and reconsidering eating how people ate 50,000 years ago before we had grain and before we had dairy and see what would happen there. That would be an approach for any kind of autoimmune problem. Having said that, I think a food symptom diary can be very, very helpful to sort out when you went through that sensitivity process, what other foods you got sensitized to. It might also be useful to find someone who does food sensitivity testing. There are a couple of people, Jason Bradley does that, Kara Chanks does that. But as I said earlier, the blood tests are not 100%. A food symptom diary, an elimination diet is really the most effective. How do I feel about enzyme supplements? Sometimes those might be helpful. I'm much more into the food. What eggs to buy from chickens that eat green things, bugs, crickets. Fermented soy versus non-fermented soy. I don't really have a strong opinion about that. Fermentation in general is a good thing, though. Is it okay to replace white sugar? You know, do you remember that first slide when I said we can eat a lot of things, but if we're eating white flour, sugar, white potatoes, you get sick. So we want to have sweet things when our brain is on fire, because 50,000 years ago, you would have, if you wanted to have sweet things, you would have gone out to eat berries because they're packed with antioxidants. That's what quenches the fire in your brain, the free radicals. So unfortunately, all this other sweet stuff is going to continue feeding the wrong guys in your gut. So a very small amount of honey, a very small amount of pure maple syrup might be okay. But our great-grandmothers knew to use spices, cinnamon, cardamom, cloves, ginger, to mitigate the bitter taste. I'd encourage you to explore some of those recipes that I have, because you know, at home, I have a cocoa that I make with soy milk, organic cocoa powder, and cinnamon. There's no sugar at all, and my kids love it. So what's there between 9 cups and 9 servings? On the daily log, I sort of define that. 2 cups of leafy greens is 1 cup of greens. A half cup of cooked greens is 1 cup of greens. Otherwise, a cup is a cup. And, you know, don't make it too hard. If you eat green, sulfur, color, and high-quality protein, and that's all you eat, you'll be fine. Is there anything else behind seaweed to get iodine that doesn't have glutamate in it? Mussels, shrimp, clams. You can get dried seaweed that is still just the dried seaweed. You know, so I've gone on to, I believe it's mainseaweed.com. You can get organic seaweed, and you get these bags of just dried seaweed leaves. I don't think there's any glutamate in that. And so I'll take a leaf, soften it in some water, and then cut it up and throw that into my soups. That's really quite lovely. I throw it into that cabbage, onion, seaweed casserole I told you about. If you get the reconstituted seaweed that's sort of cooked down and made into those beautiful nori sheets that we use for sushi, there may be glutamate in that. Can you comment on medical marijuana? Oh, no. I'm in good general health. My family likes conventional meals. Is there a halfway diet? You know, if someone would, even I did not adopt all of these things overnight. I made this change gradually. And for all of you, I would encourage you to make the change gradually. Where you would like to start. Green leaves is a great place. Then I'd go for sulfur, then I'd go for bright colors. And do things gradually. If you do it all at once, you'll be discouraged, overwhelmed, and I wouldn't go there. Start with making sure one has green leaves, salad every day. In my family, my parents had a rule. He said, yeah, it just meant you needed a second serving. And so my kids had this great fun of trying to get the other one to say yuck. And so they knew if they took too little, I was going to give them a whole lot more. So obviously these things work better if you start earlier. And talk. I ask, one thing that I'll go off to the biology class here next month, and I'll ask the kids, why are you making corporate Americans, the people who own corporate America, filthy rich at the expense of your own health? You have no idea how great you could feel, how much energy you could have, how much vitality you could have. The people who made these changes, and all my little study coordinators who are going to help me with my study, I told them, if you're going to work for me, you have to eat this way. Of course, I really can't say that, but I convinced them to do that. And they all came back and said, my God, I couldn't believe how much better I felt, how much easier school is. How would you modify the walls if you had fructose intolerance? I would eat green leaves, bright colors, and sulfur, and use the bright colors from vegetables. And what you'll probably find is as you heal the gut, that the fructose intolerance is much less of a problem. Did the people with primitive have any vitamin D deficiency? No. Vitamin D deficiency is another huge, huge issue. I should put a comment about that. We have an epidemic of D deficiency. 25 to 75% of us have vitamin D levels below 30. In which case you have a dramatically higher incidence of schizophrenia, depression, mood disorders, autoimmune disorders, cancers. And if you're in the 30 to 40 range, you still have twice the risk of heart attacks, breast cancer, and lung cancer, and I think also prostate cancer. If you get your level up to 50 to 80, you have a lower risk of heart disease, triple A's, and cancers. So although my lab report will say normal is 20 to 70, in my practice, I now tell my patients, optimal health looks like it's 50 to 80. So you want to have, and we agree that the upper limit of normal, the upper safe upper limit, safe tolerable upper limit, is 2,000 units a day. That will maintain you if you're already at 50 to 80 for blood level. I have more information on that in the black and white food is medicine handout. But vitamin D, it's a big deal. Wearing sunscreen means you don't make vitamin D. Staying inside means you don't make vitamin D. And if you're all pale, you probably are very low on your vitamin D. It's a problem. And there are some studies that use higher dose vitamin D for MS. The dietary alternative to bone broth, seaweed broth. Does it matter if food is fresh, frozen, canned? The best food is immediately off the plant, then very soon off the plant, then fresh, frozen off the plant, then stale off the plant, then canned off the plant. And if you pour the juice that you cook stuff in down the drain, you just pour it away 80% of the nutrition. Thoughts on vitamins as a substitute? No. As a substitute, you're starving your body and adding to the likelihood you're going to be ill. Vitamins can help supplement focused vitamins if you're intentionally thinking about, do you have one of those SNP issues? But to think vitamins will fix a diet that's full of white flour and sugar, that's not going to work out real. I'm on Nexium for 6 years. If I go on your diet, how can I stop the Nexium? Well, what I tell people is you don't stop your medicines. You fix the diet. You address the environmental inputs. Try and deal with the stress, the exercise, the mental exercise as well. And you reduce the need for the medication. When you begin to feel, when you discover how good feeling good can feel, then you can begin to talk to your doc about, well, you know, man, I'm feeling so good. I haven't felt this good in 5, 10 years. I'd like to try going off some of these meds. That's how you do it. You heal the body first, because I don't know how much healing you can get. I'm pleased to see in my practice that I'm always pleasantly surprised that there's much more healing capacity than I anticipate. But you never know for sure how much you're going to get. So you fix your biology, your molecules, as much as you can. What about eggs? I think I've already answered that question. Dairy has been around for about 6,000 years. For some people, it's okay. For the majority of people around the world, dairy is not okay. How do you cook chicken livers? The way I personally like my liver is I have a lot of onions, mushrooms. I put the liver on top. I put it in the oven and bake it at 200 degrees for about 2 hours. 200. Is nutritional gluten-free? You can look at the labels. I believe Lewis Labs is gluten-free. And if you read the labels, they will say gluten-free or not gluten-free. And I believe the bulk nutrition yeast, I don't know that the co-op necessarily knows the answer to that. But they have Lewis Labs nutritional yeast, which if you look at their label, I believe they have some that is gluten-free. What is the shelf life of nori? I'm not sure. The bulk bags of real dried kelp that I get, I'm told the shelf life of that is a year kept dry. Best source of iron? Well, probably liver. How do I feel about stevia and smoothie instead of sugars? I don't know enough about stevia to have a strong opinion. What I feel better about is adding cinnamon and cardamom to the smoothies. I make my smoothies without sugar, and they're perfectly fine. If you use a spice that has a little bit of heat to it, cinnamon and ginger, for example, that cuts the bitterness really quite lovely, quite nicely. And my voice is perfect. Thank you all very much. I will be back next Thursday.